Okay, so today is Unity Day, and the OA website describes Unity Day as this day that recognizes the strength of the fellowship worldwide. It's the last Saturday in February when at 11:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, OA members cause to reaffirm the strength inherent in OA's unity. Now, I really don't know what I would have done without the unity of OA, because OA says that we are a simple program for complicated people. And I definitely have the character defect of being complicated. So that when I came into the rooms, I couldn't define recovery, but I knew it when I saw it. I saw it in all of you. This is a wonderful program of attraction rather than promotion. And I still, after all the years that I've been in program, am still attracted to this wonderful program. And I am delighted to serve and to stand up here today. 1967, Overeaters Anonymous had 100 groups across the United States. We now have approximately 6,500 meetings in 75 countries. And we also have a multitude of online meetings and telephone meetings that add to the list. And all these meetings can be found on our on the World Service website, OA.org. So, I will quote the words of Roseanne S., one of OA's founders. Remember that you are not alone. We are all with you all the time. Even though you may feel lonely and far away from others at times, we hope that you will feel our spirit of love and understanding, our desire to help you to find a new life for yourselves. We in OA have suffered as you have. We have been helped by many powers outside ourselves, and we have been shown a new way to live. We say with all sincerity, come with us and let us show you the way. And as we reach out to you, we truly hope that you will take heart and put your hand in ours. There has been a request earlier today for people looking for stating that they're looking for sponsors. So in this safe haven where we come to expose our secrets, is there anyone in the room looking for a sponsor today? Hands up high. Nice and high. Can I have all the people that are sponsoring please stand? These are the people that are sponsoring. Again, people that need a sponsor, raise your hand. Okay. We can look at each other, make a visual attachment, ask higher power to give us the emotional attachment we need. I've heard that these kind of workshops don't wait for the perfect sponsor, just pick one. So hopefully, everyone who needs a sponsor will leave with one today. So, it's 11:30 in California, 1:30 in Missouri, and 2:30 a.m. on Sunday in China. And there are meetings in Beijing and Hong Kong. I don't know whether they're awake during the OA promise, but we'll see. And there are also people who could not be here today. I remember I was in retail, and I would excuse myself to the ladies' room at 2:30 on Saturday and speak the OA promise. We're all here with you at this time. They're all stopping. They're all bowing their heads. And we now pause to feel this presence with these many and embrace our conscious contact with a higher power. In one unified voice, with the orange sheets that have been handed out, we will now speak the OA promise. I put my hand in yours, and together we can do what we could never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend upon our own unsteady willpower. We are all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. Immediately after, you lost me. Immediately after the speaker, we will be having our raffle. And we'd just like to say, please, if you can't stay to help us clean up, please be kind enough to return your chair to the rack. We have classrooms that need to be put back in order, and the large room in the back that we need all the chairs put back in there and the chairs put back on the rack. We need to vacate the facility within a half an hour of closing. So good luck with anybody that joined the raffle, that put their ticket in the raffle, and I would like to now introduce Lori Digg.
Wow, that was fantastic. Is this on?
Yeah, hold it real quick.
Hello? Okay, hi. That was incredible, that prayer. Great to be here. If I'm in South Jersey, I'm Lori, and I am a compulsive overeater. If I'm in North Jersey, I'm Loretta, and I'm a compulsive overeater. The common denominator is I am definitely a compulsive overeater. And in fact, as was emphasized in the last workshop, I'm happy to say I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I'm very grateful to be in that condition. It is such an honor to speak here today. Margaret, thank you so much for inviting me, and thank you all for being here. Just to qualify, I'm 12 years back-to-back abstinent. I'm holding off 60 pounds during that time. And my home group meets in Galloway, New Jersey, on Tuesday and Friday nights at 6:30, which is near Atlantic City. If you're ever down for the weekend or any time, please come by and see us. We'd love to see you. I'm going to tell in a general way what happened when I was eating, what happened to bring me into OA, and what life is like now in recovery. And I'm going to tell that story pretty much with respect to the steps as they are described in the big book. Today is Unity Day, and it's the 12 steps that unify us all. And it's the 12 steps that have absolutely changed my life. Just a little background. As a child, I was not overweight. In fact, I was underweight. And I didn't know that that's the flip side of this disease. It's the same thing. I had no idea. As a teenager and in my 20s, I was thin. I was active. I was in a lot of sports. I worked in the dry cleaners. I sweated off a lot of weight. But when I wrote my food history, okay, I realized even back then I had a problem with food. It just didn't show itself as excess weight on my body. When I got to the age when I learned how to bake, okay, I was really into baking, okay. Well, I learned not to double the recipes, but to quadruple them. Because so often, the batter never made it into the oven, okay? There was pasting and everything, you know, totally out of control. When I was cooking, I would certainly taste more than what I think a normal eater eats in the course of a meal, okay? And when I was babysitting, there was a family that I babysat for once a week, you know, for a couple years, and they would, oh, help yourself, do whatever in the kitchen, right? I remember one night they had on top of the refrigerator a pastry box full of delicacies. And without realizing it, in the course of the night, I emptied that pastry box. Now, the denial of this disease, right? I just left the empty box there, went home, you know, never said a thing. The following week, when the father came to pick me up, he was embarrassed to say he had to say something. They were having company the next day, and that was their dessert. And they went to pull out their dessert for their company and found an empty bakery box. I mean, you know, normal people don't do those things. They just don't do those things. Okay. I didn't start to see excess weight on my body until I got married and actually had my first office job. And I started in a more sedentary lifestyle, I guess, than what I was used to. And the weight started to come on a little at a time. It was really after my first pregnancy, however, that the weight caught my attention. I think in the pregnancy I gained, what, 60 pounds or something? And then this little 5.5-pound baby came out. Where's all this other weight, right? I thought it'd be gone after the birth, right? I wasn't able to lose that weight, okay? And I maintained, I lost some of it, you know, but I mean, it got to be 30 or more pounds I couldn't really lose. And I went and I found my first weight loss club, okay? And it worked. I mean, I did what they said, and it worked. And I became a lifetime member. I got one of those little pins. Anybody else have one of those pins? Okay. And the minute I got my pin, I thought I graduated, right? And I started to eat. I could not believe how fast that weight came back on. And in a blink. And not just the weight I lost, but but more. Okay? And that began a 25-year history of up and down, and up and down. And I could talk the whole hour about that 25-year history, okay? It was pretty disheartening, okay? And I'm sure you've all tried all the same stuff that I tried. And, you know, the different commercial plans, the different fad diets, the two-week things. But that, I guess, brings me to step one, okay? I was taught step one is the problem. And the problem was certainly that, although I didn't admit it at that time, okay, I was powerless over food. Okay, and my life absolutely became unmanageable. Okay, how did it become unmanageable? Well, first of all, the denial of this disease for me is unbelievable. I mean, we wear this disease, okay? I don't know what I saw when I looked in the mirror. I looked for the picture that I usually circulate when I speak in OA. I've misplaced it. I don't know where it is. It was snapped at a church picnic. It was candid. I actually stole it off the bulletin board. I was so embarrassed. Okay? Now, I don't know what I saw when I looked in the mirror. But before coming to speak here today, I looked through family albums to try to find another picture. And it became so clear. I mean, I hid from the camera. I mean, there's nowhere in any of my family albums is there a full picture of me at the height of my weight. I'm either hiding behind the kids or hiding behind somebody or not in the picture. I mean, I hid from the camera. So, I mean, that's part of the denial of my disease. I can remember things like being at a food court at lunchtime and walking down with, like, sweets dribbling down my face and seeing my cousin in the food court and diving into a store so she wouldn't see me eating what was in my mouth. Okay, that kind of thing. There were years where I had a really high-level executive job. Okay, so I wore these neat little business suits, okay, this skirt with the waistband and the jacket. And as I would gain weight, okay, I would like start to unbutton the waistband in the back because the jacket covered it, so yeah, it didn't really show. And then as more weight would come on, the zipper would come down a little bit because the jacket was long enough, you know, so it really, nobody could tell that I'm gaining weight, right? Except that my hemline is now at about a 45-degree angle, right? And I think I'm looking stiffy. I mean, just unbelievable. I can remember an associate at when the weight was really getting out of control, inviting me to go shopping at Macy's at lunchtime. Let's find something, a different style for you. You know, it's like something that fits. I guess is what she had in mind. Oh, my life was unmanageable. Okay, unmanageable. In addition to the food unmanageability, okay, I had mood swings. I don't know if anybody here ever has depression. Okay. I don't know if anybody here ever has anxiety or fear. Okay, I spent 25 years in and out of doctor's offices trying to figure out what is wrong with me. Okay, what is wrong with me? I had no idea, and no doctor ever told me that nutrition is linked to moods. I had no clue. But I can tell you from my experience, okay, my moods were linked to my nutrition. That's all I can say. My moods were definitely linked to my nutrition. I don't have those kind of mood swings anymore. Now, on any given day, I may not be the model of mental health, okay? But I don't have those mood swings anymore. And I am so grateful. I am so grateful. So, what can I say? What happened? Step one, yes. I was absolutely powerless. I am powerless over food. We all admit in this program we're powerless over food, and our lives were totally unmanageable. What happened to bring me into OA? Well, step one is the problem, I was told. Step two is the solution. Okay? We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, and that is the solution. That is the solution. Well, if I need to be restored to sanity, what's insanity? I didn't think I was insane. I thought some of you were a little weird when I first came in, but I didn't think I was insane, okay? But the insanity, for me, as we've all heard, is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And I kept trying these diets and trying to screw up my willpower, and this time it's going to work. Same thing, over and over again, okay? Well, I was blessed to have a good religious upbringing. When I was a child, I was taught to talk to my higher power like an imaginary friend. I was even taught to sit and listen. It was good training for a young child. Good training. But I got too smart for it, okay? When I got to be a teenager, I thought that it was kind of like Santa Claus, his imaginary friend, okay? And playing was like writing my list for Santa, and I just got too smart. So I, you know, my higher power was science and, you know, the accomplishments of mankind. I spent 20 years like that. Eventually, a set of events did bring me back. And I did hook into a prayer life again. And I got some formal training in meditation. And I do believe that's what opened me up to be open to find a solution, okay? When I'm meditating, when I'm linked into my higher power, it is hard for me to live in denial. Because if I'm asking for guidance, I'm going to get the guidance whether I want it or not. Okay. What happened to me that brought me into OA, I actually took a cross-country trip. And on that trip, I happened to meet somebody who mentioned, just in passing, you know, she had a problem with food, she had a little problem with food, but she went to OA and she took care of the problem. And there she was, an attractive person in a normal body weight. You know, but my ears were open. Okay, my ears were open. I also met somebody on that trip who was an ex-smoker. And I know we're going to talk about food, and this is, you know, this is OA. However, I have to tell you, I was a very heavy smoker. And every time I tried to quit smoking, I gained huge amounts of weight. Huge amounts of weight. So much so, one of the times I quit smoking, I gained 60 pounds in 6 months. And I could not stop the weight gain. I didn't just get there and not be able to lose it. I couldn't stop. I consciously went back to smoking just to stop the weight gain. So for me, smoking and food are very closely related. Well, on this trip, I also met somebody who knew about the Nicotine Anonymous. I never heard of such a thing, right? Well, I got the willingness on that trip to address both of these addictions, okay? People said to me, you can't lose weight while you quit smoking. It can't be done. And I said, I'm sure you're absolutely right, but I can't do either. So what matter does it make whether I try to do both? I've tried to do one, I've tried to do the other, I can't, okay? But I have come to believe in a God that can do anything, okay? And I did. When I got back from that trip, I joined OA and Nicotine Anonymous within 3 days of each other, okay? And that for me, I guess without knowing at the time, that was probably my second step. Because I had come to believe in a God who could do anything. And that God was restoring me to sanity by opening my ears to people that had found a solution. Okay? So I think that was my second step. For me, the miracle is the willingness. Everything else is laid out in the book. I mean, we've been to some great workshops, okay? Makes it very clear, the solution is very clearly laid out in the book. But it's the willingness to do it. That for me is the miracle. That for me was the gift from God. And I'm very grateful for it. So I have to say, I was at a Unity Day here about 10 years ago, and I saw a woman who said something that, boy, it clicked, and I've been using it for 10 years. This woman said, she was on a panel of long-timers, and somebody asked her, how do you do this year after year after year, okay? Call your sponsor, weigh your food, how do you do this? And she said every day she writes the first line of her journal, please keep me willing today. And I adopted that. And I'll tell you, I share it wherever I go. I thank you for it. It's a real gift. It's the willingness that's the miracle. Okay, so step one is the problem. And step two is the solution. Okay, and step 3 through 12, I was taught, is the program of action that implements the solution. And the instructions on how to do with those steps, as we've heard in the panel in the big book and we heard at the last workshop, those instructions are very clearly laid out in the big book. Very clearly. When I came to step 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him, I thought, oh, that's the easy one. I've done that. Okay? I'm good with that. Okay? Well, my sponsor took me through, however, and thank goodness my sponsor is also into, you know, prayer and meditation and all that stuff, so we resonated real well. And, however, she took me through the Big Book's description of the third step. And she pointed out to me that, she had me read pages 60 to 63 and put my own name in those pages, okay? And they came to life for me, because then I started to see that I was indeed like the actor who's showing up to the rehearsal, and I have a script to read. Okay. But I get there, and I think I'm the director, because I know how everybody else should be reading their script, right? And as she had me put my name into those pages, 60 to 63, and she asked me to insert the names of anybody that I may not be exactly at total peace with in those pages, I could see they all started to translate. If only my daughter would do what I know is best for her, I would feel better, right? I mean, that's the whole emphasis of step three of the big book. And then I realized that, yes, I did have a prayer life. And yes, I did have a belief in God. But even in my prayer life, I had the plan. Okay? Now, God, please implement my plan. Right? Fix this one. Change that one. Make this happen. Whoa! What's going on here? And so the big book, step three, helped me see that I needed to change my prayer life and think, God, what can I do for you today to help implement your plan? And I may not even know what that plan is, but who are you putting in front of me this day and what do you want me to do? I heard that just in the last workshop. You do. The prayer becomes, God, what do you want me to do for you today? And give me the strength to do it. Wow. Change my prayer life. I'll tell you that. Steps 4 through 9. Wow, absolutely changed my life. The big book talks about having a spiritual awakening. And they define that spiritual awakening as a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. And for me, steps 4 through 9 absolutely made that personality change. I had spent years in therapy with all these mood swings. Let me tell you, I could analyze why I did what I did. And I'm not putting therapy down. I learned a lot of good things in therapy. I really did. But it just didn't help me with my addictions in any way. Okay? It just didn't help me with my addictions in any way. Steps 4 through 9, I didn't analyze anymore. Steps 4 through 9, I started to look at where's my part in all the insanity and all the upsets that are going on in my life. Because before doing these steps, when I was upset, it was something you had done to me. Okay? And if only you would stop doing that stuff to me, I'd be okay. Okay? But step 4, I had to look at it differently. I had to look at every resentment that I had. And then, as they said in these workshops, you know, hey, before recovery, I could list everybody I was angry at. I could list all the stuff you did to me. But I never, never did what they said in the book. Putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where's my part? And what can I do to change my part? Wow. That's, even self-done as a child, I mean, that I had a hard time with. You know, a child has no part. I mean, what happens if somebody hurts you as a child? Well, my sponsor said as an adult I have a part. As an adult, I can either fan those flames of memory and anger and churn it, or I can learn to pray for that person, okay? Ask God to soften my heart, okay? And look at that person as another sick puppy just like myself. Okay? In fact, I got some incredible guidance from a friend in this room on some resentments that were really, really tough. Some of them, the healing came through meditation, okay? Where the person helped me see that I can't hold in my heart at the same time anger and love. So the person suggested I take pictures, you know, family pictures and stuff, where in the same picture is like my grandbabies, right? Where my heart's all mushy and soft. And take the pictures of, you know, the people that I had a hard time with my grandbabies and meditate on them. It's amazing. Because when my heart's mushy and soft, I can't be angry at anybody. And then I start to look at compassion, okay? You know, we're all just a bunch of sick puppies trying to get well, right? Also suggested I take pictures of that person as a young child and meditate on that. Look at this sweet, innocent little baby. What happened in life to make that person different? What happened to me? I'm not sure, you know, sweet little innocent that I was born either. I mean, life has its way to affect us. And as long as I'm looking with compassion, the fourth step prayer says, you know, God, please, this is a sick person. Help me. Help me not to be angry. How can I be helpful? Wow. Good stuff. I also heard somewhere in the rooms of OA at one of the conferences the concept that any resentment is a placeholder. Anybody hear that? I know some people have. The placeholder is for a life skill that I have not yet learned. What a concept. You know? Somebody hurts me. Somebody does something really mean to me. Okay? And I get a resentment. Well, if I had the life skill, or if I was willing to learn a life skill to protect myself from that kind of personality, or to learn how to exit, or to learn how to sidestep, or to learn how to change the subject of the conversation, or, you know, to learn some life skill, I wouldn't have to be hurt. And then I wouldn't have to have a resentment. So a resentment is a placeholder for a life skill I've not yet learned. Wow. A lot to learn. The fear part of the fourth step, amazing. I didn't think I had many fears until I started to do what it said on page 68 in the book. List my fears on paper. Put them down in black and white. And then look at each of them. Isn't it because self-reliance failed us? Isn't it because I'm not trusting this God that I profess to believe? Yeah, if I'm trusting God, what could I possibly be afraid of? Okay? So I have to revisit that. And I have to revisit it periodically. Because things happen in life. I mean, sometimes it's, yeah, there is some really scary stuff going on. I had to do it just recently. And I had to do it several times, like once a week for a while. Actually put the fears on paper. What's the worst thing that could possibly happen here? Put them on paper and then pray, God, please take these fears away from me. Direct my attention to where you would have it be. And it's usually to help somebody else and get out of my own head. Step five, when I admitted to God, to ourselves and another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Well, the exact nature of my wrongs were contained in that fourth column of the fourth step. You know, every place that I had a part in doing something that I thought was entirely your fault, okay, those were the exact nature of my wrongs, okay? And I got to discuss them with a sponsor that was so kind in our interaction. Every time I would talk about something, she'd match it with a story that she had that was similar. So I didn't have this sense of shame, you know. She kept saying, we're not bad people trying to learn how to be good. We're just sick people trying to get well. And this is the process to get well. And so it was a really good, good experience, this fifth step. Very different from my therapy. My therapy, I learned how to analyze and understand. In my fifth step, I learned to simply say, okay, I was wrong. Plain and simple. Wow. And how can I learn how to make it right? Whew. Step six and seven. I was taught those are the change steps. That's where we ask God to change us. Step six, we were entirely ready to have God remove our defects of character. When I finally saw that all this upset in my life, I had a part to play. Then I wanted to be rid of this stuff. I mean, I wanted to be at peace. I didn't want to be angry all the time. I didn't want to have these mood swings all the time. I wanted to live a normal life. So I was entirely ready. That didn't take me a while, okay? The seventh step, beautiful seventh step prayer in the big book, beautiful one. But what my sponsor was suggested to me that I make it more personal, okay? My creator, I'm willing that you have all of me, good and bad. That's true. But when I get into my daily life, in fact, about 10 minutes after my fifth step, a lot of times I think it's your fault again, okay? It's hard to keep that in my mind, okay? So what I had to do was get little file cards and make a seven-step prayer for everybody in my life that was on my four-step list. I mean, not the ones from my childhood, but in my current life, okay? So that I could be aware what was my part in this relationship, even if it was simply bringing negative energy to the relationship, okay? I know there was one person, my seven-step prayer went like this. God. You know how she gets under my skin, okay? Please help me. Don't show it in my facial expression. Don't show it in my tone of voice. Don't show it in my body language. Help me to just listen as if I'm listening to my best friend. And I had to pray that prayer before every interaction with this person because I had to become aware I was bringing negative energy that person couldn't say hello without me, the hair on the back of my head, you know, on the back of my neck. Right? I mean, it was really a lifetime of who were the good guys and who were the bad guys. And recovery taught me there are no good guys and bad guys. You know, it's just we're all people doing the best we can with the cards we were dealt, with the ways we were raised. So, those are my 7-step prayers. 8th step, a list of all persons we had harmed. Well, I certainly started with that 4th step list. Because all those bad guys weren't really such bad guys after I went through this process and saw my part. And then there were more people that wound up on that list as well. And actually, when I did my 5th step, okay, the 6th, 7th, and 8th step were all done on the same day. You know, get done with the 5th step, as it says in the big book, go home, take a break, rest and pray for about an hour, okay, and then immediately do 6 and 7 and start on the 8th. Get going. Don't drag this out. This is life and death stuff. My 8-step list I was taught to divide up into a bunch of names, okay? Who are the ones, yeah, I think I could do something now. Who are the ones, maybe someday, okay? And who are the ones, never, no way, no how, okay? And I was told, just begin with the right now ones, the ones that are okay. But I'll tell you, that's not the way it worked for me, okay? My higher power had other plans, okay? And it's really with the 9th step that my spiritual awakening, I believe, happened. Because no sooner did I get names on that 8-step list than people started showing up. People I hadn't seen, I'm telling you, and they were on my no way never list. Okay? I couldn't believe it. I just got done with this, and I went to a workshop, okay, having to do with my job. This guy walks into this workshop. I haven't seen him in 5 years. He doesn't live in the area. His expertise has nothing to do with that workshop, okay? But he happens to be there. Oh, well, you know, I mean, I wound up having lunch with him. I said what I had to say. It was an incredibly wonderful experience. Put his hand on mine. He said, I know you were going through a rough time at that time, blah, blah, blah. So glad to see you're looking so good. Yeah. Warm fuzzies all over the place. Okay? Hey, this is going to be good. Except that's not what happened. Okay? Because, I mean, it had to be the following week that somebody who lives across the other side of the country, okay, happened to have some business in my area. Okay, and comes to stay for 3 days. And he was on the never list. Okay? I said to my sponsor, I'm not ready for this one. She says, you're not ready. You're not ready. God has delivered him onto your doorstep. And you're telling me you're not ready? She said, you've got to ask your God to make you ready, you know? And I did. I stalled it out till I'm driving him back to the airport, and I kind of mumbled what I had to say. And it was not a warm fuzzy. It was not. It was a rub your nose in it kind of a thing. And it wasn't pleasant. And I was like, oh, I don't like this system at all. And I called my sponsor, and I said, can you believe this is what he said? Blah, 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 blah. She said, well, sounds like another sick puppy, you know? And you know something? He lost power over me. He just lost power over me. Amazing. I just came to see him, like she said, another sick puppy. She said, pray for him. Wow. You know, my relationship with this guy has so improved over the years. And I was talking to somebody during lunch about it, and he said, boy, he got better. He never even went to a meeting, did he? You know, I have to learn how to deal with the different personalities in my life. It's just that simple. And thank you, God, you know, that we do become changed. We do begin to see things differently. Wow. Most of my step nines were not apologies. You know, most of them were what my sponsor described as living amends, changes in behavior. You know, for example, there was a difficult person in my family, or at least I had a difficult relationship with a person in my family, which is different than a difficult person. I didn't go and apologize for always trying to avoid that person. You know, I mean, the step 9 says, except when to do so might injure them or others. I instead went out of my way to visit that person more, and, you know, make phone calls more, and just living amends, those kinds of things. If others complained about certain behaviors of certain people, my amends were that I had to be ready to come up with a yeah, but, you know, can you believe what they said? Yeah, but they had us all over for the holiday, right? Can you believe what da-da-da-da-da-da-da? Yeah, but this was good about the event. And it couldn't be Pollyanna stuff. It had to be accurate stuff. So that I no longer fed in. I don't know if your family ever does that, but you know, somebody is, you know, whatever. You know, I couldn't feed into that. I had to always have the counter, the opposite. Let me tell you, I'm at peace with everybody in my family now. I don't know how it happens. I don't know if it gets back to them, that somebody's saying good things about them. I don't know what. Did they all change? I don't know. All I know is I don't have problems with anybody in my family anymore. And I'm so grateful. So grateful. Life is so different. So that's 4 through 9, and it absolutely changed my life. Absolutely changed my life. In a way that nothing else has ever done. And I really believe it's God. It's God doing for me what I could never do for myself and what I could never do with the help of another human. I mean, it really was a lot of prayer, a lot of God helped me, God helped me. Step 10, continue to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, not if, but when we were wrong, promptly. Admitted it. Always, as I'm going around, I have to look for selfishness, dishonest, resentment, and fear. And when these crop up, I have to deal with them. We hear a lot about the promises of the 9th step. I love the promises of the 10th step. And I think somebody gave me a little cutout, so I guess one of the workshops, thank you. One of the workshops, you must have been talking about the promises of the 10th step. I love them. We ceased fighting anything or anyone. Everything. Not just our disease. Everything. Sanity will have returned. Whoa. That's good. If tempted, we recoil as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. We're not fighting it, nor are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. The problem has been removed. We're recovered. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. This is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Those are my favorites. I love them. I'm not there all the time, but boy, thank you, God, with the help of the people around me, I know how to get back there when I need to get back there. And I'm willing to do whatever it takes. Step 11 is my favorite, absolutely my favorite. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. I read those pages, 84 to 88, every day, and they're a description of the 10th step and the 11th step, and it just reminds me. There are such easy, clear directions. It makes it so simple how to do these things. For meditation, I have had formal training in meditation, and it's helped me a great deal, but I love what's in the big book, real simple. What do I do when I retire at night? What do I do upon awakening? What do I do throughout the day? Simple, clear directions. For the retire at night one, it suggests we review our day, and one of my spiritual directors gave me a way to review my day that makes it so simple. He suggested that I view my day, I image it like I'm watching it on TV, okay? I just watch the day over again. And if it was a peaceful, happy day, it's just a thank you prayer. Thank you, God, what a day. Okay, but if there were any upsets whatsoever in that day, then I have to go back to the 10th step questions. Where was I dishonest? Where was I fearful? Where was I resentful? I have to question myself, what's my part in any upset in that day, and make amends quickly. Talk to somebody, make amends quickly. Don't let it build and ferment like so much of it did for so much of my life. If I can apologize quick, I usually don't make an enemy, okay? If I let it ferment in my mind and theirs, all bets are off. I say a lot of strength prayers. You know, God, please give me strength. Heading down a buffet line. God, please don't come down this line with me and walk in front of me. I remember my first Thanksgiving in program. I planned the day all wrong, and I thought we're eating at noon, and I got there, and the hostess is peeling potatoes, and oh, man, there's going to be no dinner soon. And there's hors d'oeuvres going around that I can't touch. I just want a piece of lettuce. Can I help you make a salad? You know, no, no, sit down. And I remember going up to the bathroom and just praying. Just, God, get me through this day. Ooh. And I did. I didn't stop. I mean, the day passed. But the strength is there. The strength is there when I ask. I also do a lot of gratitude prayers all the time. Every time I see food that I can't eat, I say a thank you prayer. Thank you, God, for the strength to pass that up. There was a time when I couldn't. Every time I see anybody who's overweight, thank you, God, for showing me what works for me. And please help them find what works for them. If I have a bad day at work, thank you, God, I have a job. I mean, the economy is a lot of people with no jobs. Thank you, God, I have a job. And a lot of the prayers that I learned in these rooms, just by hearing other people. God, please, don't let me want anything more than I want you. Help me empty myself so you can better fill me. With a paraphrase of the fear prayer on this page 68, God, take my life and show the miracles that you can do. Because I sure messed it up. Wow. When I begin each day with meditation, the whole day is different. Everything's different. My perspective is different. And I go in and out of intervals, man. I'm not in an everyday meditation interval right now. And it's like, when I sit down and do it, it's like, why am I not doing this every day? It's incredible. I went before this time, and I found a little room and I meditated there. It's like, oh my goodness, why am I not doing this every day? That's going to be my resolution from today. I got to get back to every day. It's just too good. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. My spiritual awakening is, yes, God is very real, and he intervenes in my life when I invite him. He gives me the strength when I ask him. This is not just some wonderful stories we read in our religious groups, wherever they are, of things that happened thousands of years ago. I mean, this is real today, and it works. Carry the message. Yeah, I do try to carry the message. There is a solution for this disease. There is. For me, that solution includes I'm abstinent from sugar, I'm abstinent from flour, I work the 12 steps very seriously, I do the tools, I weigh and measure my food, I call my sponsor every day, I sponsor a lot of other women. I do these things, and I do them happily. And I know they'll keep me in recovery, because I don't want to go back there. I don't want to go back ever again. Practicing these principles in all our affairs, that's the challenge, okay, that's the hard one. And there I need help. I need a lot of help. Thank God for sponsors. Thank God for network. I mean, I always need help if I'm in the middle of something. I can see your stuff just fine. I just don't see my stuff, okay? So I need help when I'm in the middle to see things through the perspective of the steps. I did these steps. I was guided through these steps quite a while ago, okay? And I've been living in 10, 11, and 12 for a while. And my life is good. But a couple years ago, I was invited to redo these steps as if I had never done them before. And that was hard for me to do, but I had to pray this set-aside prayer, you know, God, please help me set aside everything I know about you and everything I know about the steps so I can have a new experience of you. And I was willing to do that. So I did. And because I've been living in 10, 11, and 12, when we got to step 4, I really couldn't come up with any resentments. I mean, my life's pretty clean, and when there's an upset, I take care of it pretty quickly. So the person that was sponsoring me through, she said, well, why don't you just meditate on each phase of your life and see what comes up? You know, start with early childhood and school days, and just meditate. Ask God to help you see whatever you need to see. What an experience. Oh my God. What came up for me was a flood of happy childhood memories that I never even knew were there, okay? First time through these steps, I think I had a resentment toward everybody I ever knew, okay? Now, it says in our book, these feelings, the fears, the resentments, the guilt, they block the sunlight of the Spirit. And it's so true, because revisiting, you know, these times of my life in meditation, I had stuff that I forgot, beautiful stuff, wonderful stuff. It was such a spiritual trip. I recommend it to anybody who's living clean. Just go meditate on different times of your life and see what comes up. See what comes up. It was an incredible experience. Incredible. But I have to share it because a real fruit from that I received not too long ago. My mom came into recovery, OA, at the age of 80. Okay? God bless her. She worked the steps the best she could for those next 8 years. Okay? My mom and I, the last 10 years, I'm telling you, we developed a relationship like we never had in our lives. It's incredible. Well, she passed away with some. Okay? And I was fortunate enough to be able to spend the last 6 weeks with her. Up in a hospital in North Jersey, I'm a teacher. She was considerate enough to get sick over the summer, you know, so I could, I mean, she was really very thoughtful in a lot of things, okay? And she passed away at the very end of August. I mean, it was really incredible. And I got to spend those 6 weeks with her, and it was, what a gift. But what's incredible is the last 24 hours, she really made a decision. She made a decision that she was going. I mean, she refused intensive care. She said, no, I can't get my visitors there. You know, leave me here. Okay, she refused dialysis. She refused a tube. I mean, she was done. Okay? So we put her on hospice when the time was. And I got to sit there and hold her hand until she took her last breath. Okay? And because I have done this work, okay, the memories that came to me when she couldn't even respond anymore were all these happy childhood memories that came up. It was unbelievable. It's like, hey, Ma, you remember the first time you took me to the theater? We saw My Fair Lady in the costumes and the this, and she'd squeeze my hand, you know? Or, Ma, do you remember when you were the brownie leader and we had the brownie day camp on Route 4 and da-da-da-da? All these memories were just flooded that I could just kind of ease her out with those happy memories. It was a beautiful thing. And I don't think that would have happened if it weren't for this program, really. My channels were clear. I'm telling you, when my time comes, I hope I go out like her. She went out with such dignity. I heard in a workshop earlier today something I hadn't heard in OA before. I came for my body. I stayed for my head. I found my heart. I think that's what happened. I'm willing to do anything to stay in this condition, to stay abstinent, to stay deep in the steps. To be sponsoring. The Big Book says we have a daily reprieve based on the maintenance of our spiritual condition, and I maintain that condition by sponsoring other people. I'll do anything to save you. I wonder if patients who are terminally ill, let's say terminal cancer patients or something like that, if they were told if they did these things, they would get well. I wonder what percentage of those people would be willing to do exactly what we do, okay? Well, I think those of us that have this disease, we are terminally ill. I think this is the biggest killer in our nation. It's just not called death by overeating. It's called death by stroke or heart attack or diabetes or high blood pressure or failed kidneys or whatever the heck the symptom is. We are terminally ill. And there is a solution, and it does work. It does work. I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful. I've been in a normal body weight over 12 years. I am not plagued with mood swings. I have peace in my life. Not every day, not all day, but I know how to get back there with the help of you guys. So I guess that's it. It's been an absolute honor to speak to you here today. And thank you so much.